Picking up, this is part four of the introduction to authorityresearch.com, the website. Now I'm going to talk about the power of the group dynamics. This is Kurt Lewin. He edited the Frankfurt School's paper. He wasn't a member of the Frankfurt School or the Institute of Social Research, but they were jealous of their material, so he definitely understood their process. And this is, it wouldn't have worked without his work. He was key to this stuff working. I'll get into him a little bit later on here. In his work, Resolving Social Conflicts, Selected Papers on Group Dynamics, he writes, "The group to which an individual belongs is the group for his, or the ground for his perception, his feelings, and his actions." Again, the group to which an individual belongs is the ground for his perceptions, his feelings, and his actions. Now, it's no longer the individual. Under the father, you can have several children, but they're all treated as individuals under one authority. In a group, the difference is the father says no compromise. When he gives you facts or truth or command or rule, no compromise. The group requires compromise. Those are the difference. By moving the child's focus from being on the father, on what the father would say to the group, to what all the children have in common, makes the child and his carnal nature the basis of communication. The child's paradigm, that is his way of feeling and thinking and acting toward himself, others, the world, and authority, is changed. These are amazing quotes. This is by George Hegel in System of Ethic Law. He writes, the child, now backing up, thesis, if it's a father, the antithesis would be the lust of the child. There's no synthesis. He just says no. But if you change and you put the child to focus on the feelings, focus even on the family, because that's relationship, not authority. The child, Hegel writes, contrary to appearance, is the absolute. This is Hegel. The rationality of the relationship. He is what is enduring and everlasting, the totality which produces itself once again as such. And I'll add to clarify it, once he's liberated from the father's authority to become as he was before the father's first command, rule, fact, or truth came into his life, separating him from himself and the world. In other words, now he's of and for himself and the world only. So if you make the child the thesis, the father becomes the antithesis. And you can have synthesis. That means all the children now find what they have in common. Because before that, the father's commands, rules, facts, and truth that differed between the children kept them from coming together. I'm right, you're wrong. But we get rid of that negative language, you're wrong, then we can have this process controlling the world. Then, this is Kurt Lewin in Kenneth Bonet's book, Human Relations and Curriculum Change. A friend of mine called it a cookbook on humans. It literally is. It shows you the formula. It's a doctoral dissertation of Kenneth Bonet, including all of these different sources, Kurt Lewin's work. Now, Kurt Lewin writes, it is usually easier to change individuals formed into a group than to change any one of them separately. Why? Your desire for belonging with others. It's easier to compromise. You can tell your children, do this, don't do that, and set up standards, but then you go to the relatives. You have this family get-together, and you have a relative who counters in behavior what you tell your children, and you don't reprove them. And your children see that. See, and so for the sake of the relationship of the family, you shut up. You don't reprove, you don't correct, you don't rebuke, which you would do with your own children. So it's the power of the group. It's the power of belonging with a group. The individual accepts the new system of values and beliefs by accepting belongingness to the group. Again, I'll read it again. It is usually easier to change individuals formed into a group than to change any one of them separately. The individual accepts the new system of values and beliefs. So he gets rid of the father's authority, goes to the dialogue, goes to the group, by accepting belongingness to the group. The following explains the difference between individualism and socialism. The father's authority, that is having to humble, die to, control, discipline, capitulate yourself, that is deny your lusts, in order to do right and not wrong according to the father's established commands, rules, facts, and truth, that is in order to do the father's will. Refusing to compromise in order to get along. Refusing to build a relationship, that is become at one with those who are doing wrong, disobeying, sinning, or lusting. That's the one side. That's individualism. And the facilitation of change, which is justifying your and others, including the facilitator of changes, natural inclination to lust after the carnal pleasures of the moment that the world is stimulating. That's being tolerant, see? Tolerant of ambiguity. Don't be so judgmental. And so therefore, justifying their dissatisfaction with resentment toward hatred of restraint and anyone initiating and sustaining the father's authority system. See, if I have a room full of students that are dialoguing and you come in to discuss right, wrong, they'll turn on you. It's a total different structure of communication. You can't bring the language of discussion into the environment of dialogue, because discussion carries wrong. You're wrong. And you can't take that you're wrong into a dialogue, I feel and I think. They're at odds with one another. It's called homeostasis. We have both of these. There's things we dialogue about and there's things we discuss. And so we find that equilibrium where we can live with. And that's that spectrum that these social engineers are looking at. How much are you dependent on dialogue versus discussion in your life? And they want to move you towards dialogue and making discussion, by the way, subject to dialogue. The moment you put a dialogue in a chain, the chain will break. There's no strength in it. But they talk about, well, we're going to discuss things. Well, really, it's all been prepared through dialogue. So the questions that are asked in the environment of discussion are phrased in a way that if you come in with true discussion, you're odd man out. Hopefully that'll make sense later on. Thereby justifying their dissatisfaction with resentment toward hatred of restraint and anyone initiating and sustaining the father's authority system. Either converting them, that's the power of the group. You know, you're afraid of what's going to happen to you, so you compromise, you participate. Or silencing, censoring, removing them if they continue to get in the way. That is, if they refuse to participate and change. They refuse to compromise established commands, rules, facts, and truth in order to build a relationship with those doing wrong, disobeying, sinning, lusting, judging, condemning, casting them out instead. That's the fear of this stuff. You know, the heart is deceitful above all things, desperately wicked. Because the moment you make pleasure, the dialogue, the language of dialogue, the foundation of communication, anybody who comes in with discussion, those people in dialogue begin to panic. Because judgment's coming. So you got to get rid of them. The father demands no compromise regarding his commands, rules, facts, and truth. Relationship built on self-interest demands it. While in a traditional society, the environment can contain both those who do and do not do the father's will, those advocating stimulus response as all there is. It's all sight, whatever you see. If it stimulates pleasure or pain, there you're making the criterion. The pleasure, you would accentuate. The pain, you get rid of. Automatic. So if you go to this socialist structure of stimulus response, you must remove the father and his authority. The father's authority system and the guilty conscience it engenders from the environment in order for all to become as one, thinking and acting according to the carnal nature. Create a healthy environment. And the only way you can have a healthy environment is to get rid of the father. And then you can create a healthy person. That's what this is all about. Justifying perverse behavior. Not judging, condemning, casting men out for their carnal or perverse behavior. Not being prejudiced, quote unquote, except against the father and his authority system and all who adhere or submit to it. Now, the scriptures give us this very patriarchal system. Genesis to Revelation. Proverbs 22:6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Jeremiah 6:16. Thus saith the Lord, stand ye in the ways and see, and ask for the old paths. Where is the good way? And walk therein, and ye shall find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk therein. See, if you go to the dialogue, I feel, I think, that's the generation that will not hear except being told. They're not interested in the soul. They're interested in the lusts of the moment. They call it the eternal present. Make me happy and I'll follow you. That's the iPhones. Everything out there is instant gratification. Dopamine, dopamine, dopamine. Entertain them. Same with the church. The church now is going to entertain. Entertain them. Boy, if you get rid of the dopamine and you just go pure word of God, and then that's your dopamine, doing God's will. That's all you got. You'll wipe the building clean. There'll only be a few oldies in there. I do not have to tell your child to question, challenge, defy, disregard, attack your authority as a parent. All I have to do is, as a teacher, quote unquote, using Bloom's taxonomy in my classroom, that's the effective domain, Pandora's box, is justify your child's lusts, his or her effective domain. In other words, ask them how they feel, what they think about, you know, when it comes to developing behavior, right and wrong behavior. Helping your child build a relationship with the other children upon their common self-interests, that's a group grade, and I own them. I own your child. And I'm turning your child against you and your authority as a parent. That's what Bloom's taxonomy was all about. Came in the 50s and 60s. Look what happened to the country. Isaiah 3, 12. As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. See, it's called the children are the heresiarch. It's just change. The woman is the matriarch. It's relationship. It's feelings. And so if you make feelings the standard, then the children end up ruling. Actually, the women still rule, but the children are the oppressors because they give me, give me, give me, give me, and they'll just, they get a hold of your credit card, you're in debt forever. Look at a country. As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O, my people, they which lead thee cause thee to err and destroy the ways of thy paths, the way of thy paths. Mark 13:12, and children shall rise up against their parents and shall cause them to be put to death. All Marxists, all socialists are children in adult bodies. Only when the immediate, and this is Lukacs again, only when the immediate interests, that is a child's lust or self-interest, are integrated into a total view. In other words, that's consensus. You would come together on a feel. We find this common self-interest, and we can all agree on it. We all have it in the moment. So he's saying are integrated in a total view and related to the final goal of the process. In other words, you have a group project, which you would say was okay, but it's the procedure they're using. You have to put aside your differences. You have to suspend the truth for the sake of the relationship with a group to accomplish this project. And once that unity is developed, he says, the final goal of the process, do they become revolutionary? See, overthrowing the father's authority in the children, in the group, in society. The whole system, he says, the whole system of Marxism stands and falls with the principle that revolution, which universally is happening in the garden, is a negation of the father's authority in setting policy. See, what the woman did in the garden, Adam abdicated, was no longer accepted God as the one who sets policy. See, if I get your legislator into a group and we dialogue to consensus, I've just negated you as having influence in setting policy. I now control him based upon his interests that I can help satisfy. So that's the revolution. And it is a product of a point of view in which a category of totality, in other words, group think. What does the group think? You're thinking what the group think. What all children have in common, lust for pleasure and fear of losing it, is dominant. Group think begins with, what can I get out of this group for myself? See, that's lust for pleasure, which includes the approval of men, which then leads to, what will happen to me if the group rejects me? The fear of men. That's all you have. It's fear that's driving these people in keeping them in the herd mentality in the group. Revolutionary violence. Now, this is, let's go down here and find out who. Jürgen Habermas. Revolutionary violence, in other words, overthrow of the father and his authority, reconciles the disunited parties. Now, this is some heavy reading here, but I hope you understand. This all happened in the garden. Genesis 3, 1 through 6. This was revolutionary violence. It was violence against God. That's why God said, you're out of here. I cannot allow you in the house. Because this is the heart is deceitful and desperately wicked. Look at the violence that socialism brings. You say, well, capitalism does too. Not to the degree. And capitalism isn't a holy grail either. Because it's men's hearts that's the issue. But capitalism still carries a right-wrong structure. Socialism doesn't. The only wrong in the socialism is people who don't think socialist. So revolutionary violence reconciles the disunited parties. In other words, once I get these children and your legislators into a consensus meeting, they abolish the alienation class of antagonism. In other words, the father's authority is no longer in their mind. That set in with the repression of initial morality. In other words, you as a child want to go do something and your parent says you can't do it. And now the morality is in what you want to do. It's not in your parents' standards. It's in your dialogue. It's in dialogue. The morality is in your desires, your interest. The revolution that must occur is the reaction, see, stimulus response, reaction of suppressed life. Dad, I want to go out. You can't go out. Why? Because I said so. Now we have suppressed life. And it's a duty of the group. This is, you say, well, that's not my legislator. He's a very responsible. No, this is subconscious. This is moving his thoughts and his actions into a global socialist outcome, which will visit the causality of fate upon the rulers. Who are the rulers? The parents, the property owner, the business owner, the citizens of the country. It is those who establish such domination and defend positions of power of the sort who set in motion the causality of fate. In other words, all these parents out there saying, you can do this, you can't do that, to all their children. They're saying they deserve to be removed because they divide society into social classes. So you have the father social class and then you have the children, the top-down system correlated to God. Suppress justified interests, and those are the children's lusts, call forth the reaction of suppressed life, in other words, the hate and violence, desperately wicked, the heart, and finally experience their just fate in revolution, violence against an overthrow of their right of person. Individuality under God is negated in the dialectic process, along with your right of conviction, of speech, religion, property, and business. They're gone. Now, Jürgen Habermas was a Marxist among the Marxists. He is probably the most eloquent of them all. Now, Lukács, he writes, the Communist Manifesto makes the point that the bourgeoisie, see, that's a traditional middle-class family, requiring those under authority to honor authority, produces its own gravediggers. So the traditional parents out there are actually producing their own gravediggers because you send your child into under Bloom's taxonomy in a classroom, those kids are going to come home and bury you. They're going to tear the family apart. They're going to destroy the father's authority. And so the gravediggers are the children, the students, dissatisfied with their parents' authority, justifying their self, their lust before one another. And to the point, this is happening in Europe, killing their parents, at least not caring what happens to them. We have old generation, you know, if the parent or grandparent will cost them time and money, forget. Forget them. Karl Marx wrote, for one class, this is in his work Critique of Hegel's Philosophy of Right, for one class to stand for the whole of society, another must be the class of universal offense and the embodiment of universal limits. A particular sphere, social sphere, must stand for the notorious crime of the whole society. If it's traditional parents, they see that's the crime. That's the criminals of society. So that liberation from this sphere appears to be universal liberation. For one class to be the class par excellence of liberation, another class must, on the other hand, be openly the subjugating class, the oppressed children. The only practical possible emancipation is the unique theory that holds that man is the supreme being for man. In other words, the children. See, the whole culture of France is based around children. I don't know if you realize that. And this all goes to pedophilia. This goes to all the debauchery that's out there. Because there's no father saying, you can't do that. Whatever's, and this way, the kids are all confused about who they are. Because there's no standards. It's all subjective. It's all manipulation. It's all a destruction of culture. Because culture is based upon discussion, not dialogue. This is replacing the traditional leader with a facilitator of change. All you have to do is do that. Get rid of the traditional leader, get a facilitator of change. Traditional leader's probably incompetent, not very good at what he does, but the facilitator of change is really skilled, and so you say, well, we'll get him in here, we can get more done. Well, the deed is done. It's not the person, it's a procedure. Kurt Lewin in Wilbur Brookover, A Sociology of Education, he writes, the child takes on the characteristic behavior of the group in which he is placed. He reflects the behavior patterns which are set by the adult leader of the group. You remove a traditional teacher and put a facilitator of change in his or her place, and those children are changed. Your legislator is changed. Your courts are changed. Your military are changed. Your police are changed. Every institution that you change, this pattern of leadership is changed. With traditional leadership, the individuals in a group are held personally accountable to commands, rules, facts, and truth that are established by the leader of the group, only changing their position through persuasion. While in a facilitated meeting, the individual's paradigm, the way he feels, thinks, and acts toward himself, others, the world, and authority, is changed. See, he's no longer saying what parents say. He said, what does the group think? Justifying his lust for pleasure and dissatisfaction, resentment, hatred towards restraint, towards the restrainer, towards the traditional leader and all who follow after his way of thinking and acting. Loyalty to the group toward his and its lust for pleasure and dissatisfaction, resentment, hatred towards restraint, now guiding his thoughts instead of any command, rule, fact, or truth established by the father. This directly affects his behavior. Irvin Yalom, and this is quite a read, The Theory and Practice of Group Psychotherapy. He writes, there is no more important issue than the interrelationship of the group members. So you've got to have this group. When you say, what's wrong with the group? We all have groups, yes. But if you destroy the individuality of the person and they become totally focused on the group, you've lost your individualism under God. And so he says, there is no more important issue than the interrelationship of the group members. To question the value or activities of the group would be to thrust himself himself into a state of dissonance. Other words, lust. What can I get out of this situation or object, people, or person for myself is what binds the group together. That's why you have to get rid of the father's authority. You have to be positive, not negative. You have to be have a safe zone, place, area. You know, you have to have this environment where there's no judgment or condemnation or being fear of being cast out. You have to liberate the lust. And that's what binds the group together. Fear keeps the group together. What will happen to me if the group gets upset with me or turns on me? That makes the facilitator of change in control of the individual. Now, dissonance or cognitive dissonance is a lack, quote unquote, the lack of harmony between what one does and what one believes, the pressure to change either one's behavior or one's belief. That's Ernst R. Hilgard, Introduction to Psychology. Yalom continues, few individuals, as Ash has shown, can maintain their objectivity. Remember, discussion is objective. There's some external authority giving you direction. There's right and there's wrong. Dad has a final say. Their loyalty to the father's authority or system or way of thinking or paradigm. See, few individuals can maintain that structure, the father's structure, in the face of apparent group unanimity. It's the mass, the perception. That's why God had 300 take on thousands, because he was getting them off of this mindset. The individual's desire or lust for the group's approval, affirming his lust, the pressure or force of the group justifying his lust. blocks out his desire for or blinds him to the Father's approval. He's no longer interested in the Father's approval. If the group justifies his lust, Dad didn't. Who instead of justifying his lust, as the group does or is doing, inhibits or blocks him from doing or actualizing what he's lusting after, prevents him from doing what he wants. Well, that's a no-brainer. Judging, condemning, and threatening to cast him out for lusting after carnal pleasures of the moment that the current situation or object, people, or person is stimulating, imagined, or real. Instead of humbling, dying to, controlling, disciplining, capitulating himself, denying his lust in order to do what he is told by the Father in order to do the Father's will. It's caught between doing what I want to do and doing what I've been told. Look at our culture. You can't tell them anything. Let's find out real quick here where we are as time goes by. I can go on a little bit more. Now, here is what has to eventually be destroyed. You have to start with Genesis 3, 1 through 6, self-justification. Then you get rid of Hebrews 12, the Father's authority, and the end result then is the guilty conscience. Because Marx understood that it was this guilty conscience. You're away from your parents and you're out there and somebody's doing something wrong. That's the parent's brain in you. And that sustains this patriarchal system in culture. You have to get rid of the guilty conscience. That's what this is all about. So let's look at what God says about the conscience. It's essential. Without it, we don't have any of this. And so here's what Paul writes about the law. For I know that the law is spiritual. It's external. Spirit is external to you. Well, you have a spirit in you, but it's external. It's given to you by God. It's not from the creation. It's from the Creator. But I am carnal, sold under sin. For that which I do, I allow not. For what I would, that do I not. But what I hate, that I do. If then I do that which I would not, I consent unto the law that it is good. Do you understand that? If I'm saying that I don't want to do this, and the law says you shouldn't do it, then the law's good. Now then, it is no more I that do it, but sin that dwelleth in me. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwells no good thing. That's why the scripture says, it's not in man to direct his steps. In all your ways, acknowledge him. Now, lean not to your own understanding. From Genesis to Revelation, Jesus said in the temptations, I'm getting ahead of myself, it is written, it is written, it is written. Dad says. For to will is present with me, but how to perform that which is good, I find not, because it's not from the flesh. You have to, with your mind, say, I'm going to do what the Father has told me to do. For the good that I would, I do not. But the evil which I would not, that I do. Now, if I do that what I would not, it is no more I that do it, but sin that dwells in me. Now, he's not excusing himself. He's just saying there's the law of the flesh. And if I focus on the law of the flesh, I'm going to sin. I find then a law that when I would do good, evil is present with me, for I delight in the law of God after the inward man. But I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind. That's the inward man, the mind. And bringing me into captivity to the law of sin, which is in my members. Remember, David said, thy word have I hid in my heart. And so there's that conflict. If you don't hide the word of God in your heart rules, and it's desperately wicked. And it's deceitful above all things. Oh, wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from the body of this death? I thank God. And here's the answer, through Jesus Christ our Lord. So then, with the mind, I myself serve the law of God, but with the flesh, the law of sin. The law of God. See, they had to change. They have to get rid of the law. Now, there's a law, but it's the law of the flesh. See, lawfulness without law. The law of the flesh, stimulus response. Make me feel good and I'll follow you. Make me feel bad and I'll get rid of you. See, it has to get rid of the Father's authority. Law of God, that is, of the soul, is known by being told. It's the only way, the only soul will only recognize what's being told. That's why when God created Adam, he became a living soul. God told him what he could and couldn't do. That soul recognizes that. That's why the soul died. The day you eat thereof, you rejected being told. You went to stimulus response and your soul, it died. Because the communication of your soul is being told. And it's from God because God is the one who created it. It's of him. It's from him. The law of the world, and it's not that you're God. It's that you exist. Your ability to reason, to read and write books, is a gift from God. That's your ability to evaluate the world from what he says, not evaluate him from how you feel, what you think. We can reverse that. See, there's the conflict. The law of the world or of the flesh is known by sense experience, by stimulus response. Those of and for the world of stimulus response refuse to recognize eternal death, a consequence for their carnal thoughts and carnal actions, can only see the eternal present. Their lust of the moment that the world, that the current situation or object, people, or person is stimulating, removing all who get in its or their way. In the process, this is Carl Rogers, and the process is the dialoguing of opinions to a consensus or the dialectic process. In this process, the individual becomes more open to his experience, his feelings. It is the opposite of defensiveness or rigidity. Parent's authority. His beliefs are not rigid. He can tolerate ambiguity. I think we'll pick up next one right here. We'll stop right here.